We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your host, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 195. Scott, how's your offseason going?
It's relatively quiet, I'd say. I've been watching a little bit of baseball. I'm not going to say I'm completely into the World Series and watching every minute of that game, but if it's on and I remember that it's on, I will put it on television to watch. But other than that, I'm trying to catch up on some new shows. I'm trying to I have a really horrible new addiction that I need to get past, which is effectively ruining part of my life. But
do tell.
But not much. Q-tips. I don't know if you're a Q-tip guy. Are you a Q-tip guy?
I dabble.
Okay. So I'm not usually a big Q-tip person. I haven't been. But recently, I have been using a Q-tip, and I have been getting almost like addicted to the Q-tip, where I continue to have to use this Q-tip. Like, I feel like my ear starts itching. I'm like, damn, I need a Q-tip. And then I do it, and I take it too far. I'm like a child, where I'm like doing things too much. And I've become literally like addicted to using a Q-tip and like getting anything possible out of my ear. And then I feel like it's something and it's really nothing. Now I feel like I'm playing mind games with myself.
Mm-hmm.
It's a problem.
So ladies and gentlemen, as you're listening to this, we are listening to a madman.
Yep.
We're listening to somebody who's had no sleep for over a month, ever since his son was born, plus all of the Yankees in the playoffs. And I think you're just going crazy. I think that's what you just told me.
No, it's possible. I might be trying to, I think I'm digging for something that's not there. And it just keeps coming. Yeah, it becomes a problem because then my ears start hurting. And I'm like, what am I doing? Why am I doing this? And then I go right back to the Q-tip.
Q-tip talk on off-season podcast number two of the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Just what everybody expected after the Yankees decided to move on from Joe Girardi.
Yeah, I mean that's basically what it comes down to. And now that I have so much free time on my hands, not that it's free time, but now it's time not watching the Yankees. I have to find other things, and apparently I start using my brain too much, and then I start thinking about things, and that's when the Q-tips start coming out. So
it's funny you mentioned that you're not really into the World Series. And last season when it was Cubs versus the Indians, I was glued to every single game. I watched them every night, start to finish. And this year I could give a crap less about the World Series. I'll put it on because it's on TV, but if I only catch innings 2 through 4, I'm fine with that. I don't need, and I know game 2 was like a historic game. That game is going to be talked about until the end of time because there were 5 home runs hit after the 8th inning or whatever it was. The ball was flying out of Dodger Stadium.
So that was probably the one game that I had seen the most of, and I can thank my son for that one because he was up late and just was not eating well, so I was awake and watching the end of that game. That was really the only reason I was sitting there watching. And I'm glad I did because it was pretty fun to watch. The reaction, what do you think about the reaction of the kid who, I don't even know their names, but this is the other thing is like, I've been so focused, and I'm sure you're in the same boat, and maybe a lot of people listening, so focused on the New York Yankees because there's been so many new things happening this year, and then Girardi and like all these things compounding, that I've lost my attention span for other teams. And honestly, mm-hmm. the National League might as well not exist until I get to the World Series, unless the Yankees are in there. But yeah, there's that kid, whoever, who hit the home run down 2 and acting like he won the World Series with the home run. That was an interesting celebration. He probably popped champagne in the dugout too. Maybe the gold bottle of champagne.
Yeah, we complained about the Yankees popping champagne every time they advanced a different round of the playoffs. This guy's just celebrating like he just won the World Series in game 2. It was fine. It was a huge home run at home. That's fine.
But weren't there 2 outs down, still down a run? It was just weird. I think he might have the mini bottles of champagne in the dugout.
Maybe he sensed something great was going to happen.
Well, yeah, he sensed wrong. It was a little premature celebration.
I think it's also because you and I were pretty burnt out after the Yankees run. Burnt out in a good way because we were you're so heavily invested. When your team is in the playoffs, it's all you care about from the moment you wake up to the moment you go to bed. It's all I could think about the entire month of October is who was pitching the next night, how are they going to get 27 outs, what was Judge and Sanchez going to do. It's all I could literally think about for the 20-something days the Yankees were in the postseason.
Yeah, October gave me a lot of anxiety when it came to Yankees baseball because, I mean, you know, towards the end of it when we were playing and nobody really thought the Yankees were going to be, getting out of the ALDS And then they went into the championship game, obviously. It was just a lot of anxiety and a lot of emotional stress. And I think that's right. I mean, we did a show after every single game. So that one, all of those things added up to me like needing to take a break from baseball for a little bit, as far as like watching every single inning of the World Series. Whereas last year, like you said, but also last year there was the Cubs thing. There was the Cubs element of it too, which I thought there were a lot more storylines that were better. And like one of those teams is going to end a big drought.
Well, the storyline is that the Astros have never won a World Series since they became a team, and the Dodgers haven't won since the late 80s. So those are two sort of drought.
I guess the late 80s.
If you care about that.
I don't care about the Astros not winning. I feel like the Astros, I really could care less about that.
Do you hate the Astros though? Because do you want to see them lose? Because they're kind of, first of all, they celebrate a lot. And then you got the whole Gurriel thing doing the slant eyes because of Yu Darvish being a total dickhead. So they're kind of getting some negative press that they're kind of jackasses.
Yeah, I don't know. And they're also doing they've been mocking the Yankees thumbs down thing, like George Springer on second base doing thumbs up. It's completely
a lot of pictures after they beat the Yankees in the ALCS.
Yeah, McCullers
in the locker room.
Yeah, those are all shots at the Yankees. Even now in the World Series, they're throwing shots at the Yankees. So I will remember that.
I get it while they're playing the Yankees.
But why are you doing it in the World Series?
No, I agree. Every time the Yankees got on base, they were doing the thumbs down. I'm sure it pissed them off, which is fine. If you whatever you need to do to muster up hate to beat your opponent, I get. But yeah, move on once you beat that team. The Dodgers aren't doing anything like that.
No, but so I mean, I don't necessarily hate them yet. Not as a general team, but I don't want them to win. I want the Dodgers to win. That's 100%. I definitely want the Dodgers to win.
Yeah, the lovable underdog Dodgers who spent the most money ever this season.
Yeah.
People think that it's always the Yankees spending the most money, but the Dodgers are still paying Adrian Gonzalez and Carl Crawford all that money.
The funny thing is though, but the majority of the guys in their team are super young that are not getting paid the most.
That's why people think that they're not that sort of team, because they've got Seager and Peterson and all these young kids who are making close to league minimum because they just got called up. But they have all this other money spread around the league and spread around players that aren't even playing anymore.
Yeah, old guys like Chase Utley with his white hair. I mean, if you look at like who the actual players are and how much they're making, it's probably pretty damn low. Considering
Chase Utley looks like the drunk uncle that I never had.
Yeah, you wish you had that drunk uncle though, because those uncles are fun.
Yeah, I do. Yes.
Well, you can watch Chase Utley.
We've got a lot of stuff to talk about. More, if you guys didn't listen to the podcast that we did after the breaking news that Joe Girardi was not coming back as Yankee manager, go check it out. It was released on Friday. It was an unplanned episode. We will be doing episodes every Monday, but if breaking news happens, we will do it like the Joe Girardi stuff. A couple other items came out on Girardi, but before we get to that, Scott, we want to just sort of start laying some groundwork for some event plans for next season.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about the events. We obviously did two of them this year. If you've been listening to the show for a while, you heard about our June 10th event. Then we did a September 30th event. Both had really good showings. We had an awesome time. People seemed to really enjoy it. The Yankees really liked seeing what we had going on out at the stadium too. So we're doubling down on this. This has kind of been a long-term plan of mine, something that I've wanted to do for a long time with Bronx Pinstripes, and it's coming to fruition now, and I think a lot of people are really enjoying it. But it's really that community aspect, and I know a lot of people that listen to the show have come to the events, which is a really great way for all of us to kind of hang out and meet some of you guys and just talk more baseball on in person as well. But we're going to be doing at least six events next year, and I had a meeting with the Yankees last week and just talking about how they really like what we're doing, basically giving us first dibs in sections 205 and 206 to the games we want. So the Yankee schedule has come out, but the times are not. They're all TBD if you look at the schedule right now. So we have some event, some dates that are kind of circled, but it's going to be pretty close to doing one a month. And then the majority of them will have, you know, a full event around it, whether it's a pregame, maybe a postgame. Maybe we'll mix it up here and there. Maybe we'll do one at the stadium, more t-shirts for every event, things like that. So just kind of laying the groundwork for a lot of that. And you know, we're building this community of the Bronx Pinstripes crew going to the games. It's been a lot of fun. Andrew and I know have had a blast meeting everybody. A lot of the Bronx Pinstripes writers are at these events too. So it's just a really fun way for more of us to kind of meet and get to know more Yankees fans and kind of build this community of Yankee fans that we really enjoy going to the games with. So that's what we're doing. So look out for these events. we're planning them now. We're just making all of the getting all the details together, and we'll most likely be selling individual games, obviously. But I'm going to put some kind of a package together too for the season of the games, because I know people buy the when the individual ticket sales go out, they'll look at certain games. So definitely consider this before you do that. We should have everything out by the new year. So they're going to give us most likely between 500 and 1,000 seats per game. So it's a lot. We could get as many as we want, which is awesome.
We're getting into a good majority of those right field seats at that point.
Yeah, no doubt. And the beauty of it, last year we kind of decided to do this on a whim. It was in the middle of the year. It was as the year had started already. So a lot of tickets had already been sold. This year, we're getting a much bigger start. So we're going to have very densely populated areas of those sections. So we're not going to be, we've been kind of scattered, which was one of the downsides on my, that I thought. But unfortunately it was the way it worked out because of what was available at the time. But now we have, a solid amount of seats together. So it's going to be, everybody's going to be sitting together in one block. It's going to be all the rows together. So I'm really excited about that because that makes a huge difference to me. You know, when you're able to get a whole cheer going as a section, or you're able to, everybody's wearing the same t-shirt and you can see it from out the, from different parts of the stadium. So yeah, that's something I'm very excited about. And just another step that we're taking with Bronx Pinstripes into 2018.
It's going to be awesome, and we'll talk about it between now and the regular season. So don't feel like you guys are missing out. All the details will be here on social media, on our website as well. So you guys won't miss it. So Girardi, so when we last recorded the podcast and the Yankees were moving on from Joe Girardi, we talked about this rift or this tension between Cashman and Girardi as being one of the main reasons why the Yankees decided to move on. And one bit of news that came out over the last few days is that one of the sticking points between them this season was Chris Carter, which I just find to be beautiful irony, because how long did you and I talk about Chris Carter and what a terrible baseball player he was and how he didn't make sense for this team, and that not only did he suck in the field, but he sucked at the plate and he was sucking the life out of the team and out of me and out of you, and we freaking hated the guy. Couldn't keep his eyes open at the plate. Come to find out, Joe Girardi felt the same way. Did not want him in the lineup. Did not want him on the roster. Cashman was pushing for him for whatever reason. Maybe Cashman was trying to save face. He signed him to that $3.5 million contract and felt like he needed to have him playing to justify the signing. I don't know what the reason is. I'm speculating. But all we know is that was one of the main issues they disagreed on this season.
Yeah, it's pretty ridiculous that was one of the issues, but it's probably one of the ones that just ignited more of the fire, you know, because, and Girardi's looking in baseball terms at this guy, and you're like, this guy is not a Major League Baseball player. He literally does things with his eyes closed. Can't have him on the team. We have to have better options, because anything is a better option at first base than having this guy on the team. I think that maybe Cashman early on was trying to just like, okay, just keep it going, because if he does hit the home run, he'll show some level of production. The problem is that Chris Carter, you know, what he had done in the past, like the one good thing that he had done in the past was hit a home run ball. He did not do that on the Yankees, which rendered him useless, completely useless, except for being mocked on Twitter endlessly. And I don't know why, you know, I think at that point, there was probably a lot of frustration also with Bird not being there, because, you know, he wasn't supposed to be the everyday first baseman. He was supposed to be there as a potential DH every once in a while and a backup first baseman. That was his role. But because of injuries, because Tyler Austin can never stay healthy. That guy has a problem staying on the field.
Tyler Austin came back for 2 days and then got injured.
Yeah, that's been the narrative of his career so far, is he cannot stay healthy. And then Bird, obviously, we know the frustration with the injury with him. Nobody even knew what was wrong with him, but he couldn't stay on the field. And when he was on the field, he was terrible. Turns out he was hurt that entire time with a mysterious bone in his foot, which is weird. But Chris Carter was the guy. And just Girardi just obviously couldn't accept it. I mean, I don't blame him.
To Girardi's credit, he gave him opportunities in April and May. And then after 2 months of playing, he realized it's not working. The team was in contention into June, and he's saying, we've got to find better options. Please, I gave him 2 months and he sucks. Let's move on from this experiment, is how I imagine the conversation going.
The funny thing is though, when you look at what happened after this, like towards the end of the Chris Carter era, it's not like they went out and really got somebody big to do anything. they really just patchworked it all the way through. It wasn't like there wasn't
at the deadline. At the deadline, they traded for Todd Frazier, which allowed him to move Headley over to first.
Well,
base.
Right, but that was after that Chris Carter was gone. I mean, they just kind of patchworked it. He-Man Choi, they had
G-Man Choi,
Garrett Cooper, whatever
Garrett
his name
Cooper.
Is. He came over for
I forgot about Garrett Cooper.
Yeah,
wow.
For Tyler,
a forgotten name of the 2017 Yankees.
Well,
Garrett
he's still going to be on the Yankees. I mean, this is a guy that's still going to be a Triple A, but he's a. You know, that was one of the guys, and then they had Holiday over there for a couple of days. Mm-hmm. You know, it was just a patchwork until Todd Frazier came over, and then Headley said, you know, put his hand up saying, okay, I will go over, I will solve this problem, I am your first baseman. And really, he took care of an issue, which was I am the first baseman now, yeah, exactly. So, you know, it really never got solved until Chase Headley said, okay, I'll just do something for the team.
It reminded me of the scene in Moneyball when they were arguing over Tony Pena versus Scott Hatterberg at first base. You remember that scene?
Yeah.
Yeah. Except Chris Carter was just so bad. I don't know how you could ever, I don't know how Cashman could argue with a straight face that Chris Carter should be playing.
I don't think it had much more to do with the fact that there were no other options. And Joe, you got to play with what you have because that's what we have right now. That's kind of it. And I don't think Cashman was going to give up on the power basically because of the money that they paid him. So.
But I think it's sort of a metaphor for a bigger thing, and that it's that they were no longer seeing eye to eye on the direction of this team.
But you keep saying the direction of this team. I don't really get that. I think they were pretty much in line with the direction of the team, like the vision of where the team was going to go. But as far as like very like small things, I don't think they were seeing eye to eye on. And I don't think the Cashman just...
I don't know. This isn't a small thing. Starting first baseman is not a small thing.
No, but a lot of it was based on injury. I mean, it was already into the season at that point. There wasn't much they could do. There really wasn't. Unless they were going to go out and make a trade and give up guys, which to me was against that vision. And I guarantee if you put Girardi's feet to the fire asking if you should go out and trade a bunch of guys for a first baseman right now, he probably wouldn't have said yes.
Right, they were talking about from Oakland.
Yonder Alonso. Yeah.
Like that, and that would have caused, you would have overpaid for Yonder Alonso, ended up giving up a prospect for a player that ultimately declined in the second half.
Yeah, he had a
like
bad
everyone
second
thought
half.
He would.
Yep. So I don't know if there really was a good solution, honestly. I think injuries kind of screwed that position up.
But it's sort of like the whole metaphor I said last time, where it's like you might not know what the better option is, but you know what you're looking at now isn't working. We could look at Chris Carter and tell he was not working. So I don't care what the next option is. Let's give it a shot.
Yeah, and they did. And He-Man Choi,
it took a long time. It took a really long time.
It did. No, it absolutely did. It took a long time of
two
eyes
and a half
closed
months.
Baseball.
It took how many at bats did Carter have this season? I'm looking that up right now.
I just don't know. I just don't know where that solution was because they tried. They tried to put Matt Holliday at first base. They tried to do different things. You can only disrupt your team so much by putting people out of position or bringing people up that aren't ready. There weren't very many options at that point. It was a very unique situation. At the same time, we needed him gone because, like you said, he was terrible. And anything else, at any point, anything else was better. Anything. I don't care what you do. Anything.
He played 62 games and had 208 plate appearances. And you could tell that he sucked after about 10 games.
We could tell he sucked the first time we saw him in person in spring training.
But at least you saw, once you saw him in the season, you after 2 weeks of baseball, you knew that he sucked. But you're right. We were down in spring training at the end of March, and we were saying, how is this guy in the major leagues?
Well, because beforehand, I was defending the signing because I'm sitting here, I'm looking at the numbers, because that's all, I've never really seen him play. I'm looking at the numbers, I know he strikes out a lot. I know in the past, he's been an average first baseman. He wasn't marked as a bad first baseman. He was marked as an average first baseman. And then he hit a lot of home runs. And we knew the average was going to be very low. And he's going to strike out a ton. But when I saw him in person, I was like, this person does not deserve to play baseball in the major leagues. How did you possibly get to this far? By doing what you're doing, I don't get it.
It's a true underdog story. It really is. It's amazing.
I guess it is a miracle.
I hope there's eventually a movie. It won't be a Disney movie or anything like that. Maybe it'll be straight to Netflix, or I don't even know if it's good enough for Netflix. It's probably a Hulu movie. But the Chris Carter story needs to be told.
It might go on VHS at this point. I mean, it may skip DVD, Netflix, and just straight up go old school and go
strictly
go VHS.
Streaming on VHS. It's streaming, but you can only get it on VHS.
So it was amazing that when we first saw him in person, I literally couldn't believe my eyes and how bad of a baseball player he looked when I'm
funny.
Seeing
him. Did you mean to say that, the eyes?
No, but I did not mean to say it, but that's exactly what it is. He was a baffling player.
It's just when I read the news bit that it was Chris Carter, and I remember the first 2 months of this season, you and I yelling into a microphone about how bad Chris Carter is. It was just a lot of irony. Other news on Joe Girardi: Ken Rosenthal tweeted that the Yankees notified every team around the majors that their entire coaching staff can be interviewed for positions, which obviously leads us to believe they're going to be cleaning house. We sat here a couple days ago saying it doesn't make sense to clean house. That's a huge change. You're pulling the rug out from under a team that is on the rise. Why would you do that? Yeah, you want to change the manager. I get that, but maybe don't change the entire coaching staff. That's too much change for a team that really progressed this season. But seems like they're going to be doing that.
Well, it's news that was definitely interesting. But I mean, I think you can look at it a couple different ways too. Is that, you know, the Yankees and Cashman are saying, okay, well, we have some guys on our staff that have potential to be manager. You have managerial qualities that some teams may like, and they don't want to hold their guys back. Could have been one of those. And I think that does happen often in normal cases. I don't think it makes any news at all. I don't think anybody reports on the fact that the GM says, okay, you can interview any of our guys. You hear about it in football all the time, but now because of the speculation on who the next guy is, then obviously it's making a lot more news. But it could be just, you know, the fact that they're just not going to hold anybody back from making their own decision because they don't know who the manager is. And it may change the mind of the coach as well. So it could be one of those moves.
Here's why I think it's interesting, because we said that we think it'll be in-house, a guy like Al Padrique or Rob Thompson or somebody like that. And we also said that Cashman probably knows who he has as a front runner for the position, right?
Right.
So if he knows it's going to be in-house, then he can say, well, that guy's not going to want a clean house, nor would we want him to. We want it to sort of maintain this inner nucleus of this coaching staff that worked well with these players this season. Sure, they had their ups and downs, but ultimately they got to the ALCS. So they can work with this set of players. So we don't want a clean house, unless maybe Cashman is thinking my guy is outside of the organization and he wants to clean house when he gets here.
It could be. I mean, we can't get into the mind of Brian Cashman right now because that thing is freaking guarded.
Dude, he's operating on a whole other level that we do not see right now.
Yeah, he's in the Matrix. I don't know. He sees levels that are beyond our universe. But I mean, that could be it. I mean, there was another rumor about Jerry Hairston Jr. being one of the guys,
the utility player from 2009 is gonna be.
Yeah, he was a hot prospect with the Orioles way back in the day, and he bounced around.
In 1978, he was a prospect.
But when you think of Jerry Hairston Jr. and Alex Cora, they're like, okay, that's the same guy. And then you're looking around at these other, like Dave Roberts was a guy that was, you know, platooned in the outfield, and I don't know, just the guy.
What'd you think of? Well, quick aside, what'd you think of Dave Roberts pulling Rich Hill after four innings in a World Series game in which he was cruising?
It's interesting because I don't think he normally goes more than five, right? I think that's pretty much where he lives.
Oh, it
anyway.
Was totally by the book. He was following the book that's what they wanted to get out of Rich Hill. But you and I have sat on this podcast saying that Joe Girardi sometimes is too much by the book, doesn't use what is in front of him. He might pull Sabathia or pull one of these pitchers that's cruising when he could get another inning or two innings out of him. And I mean, Dave Roberts ran out of pitching in that game. How do you run out of pitching in a World Series game?
No, I mean, that stuff drives me insane. That's why I really hope that we don't get an all analytic guy and it just goes by a book.
I think that's the way that Cashman is moving. I think that is what he wants, a by the book analytics guy. The numbers tell me I'm pulling Rich Hill or CeCe Sabathia or insert pitcher name after 91 pitches because at 92 pitches he's no longer effective.
Why do you think that? Because Girardi is that guy. Girardi is that guy. That's exactly what Girardi does. Girardi does that to a freaking T and drives people nuts because he's so by the book. I don't really understand why you think that's exactly what I don't. Everybody's
because
been
I don't
talking
think
about analytics and why Cashman's only going to these analytic guys. I don't actually believe that because I think Girardi is the guy that has things predetermined all the time.
But they were Girardi's analytics.
It doesn't matter. What's the difference?
Yes, it does matter because Girardi was yes, you're right. He was Binder Joe, but he was not the clubhouse manager they wanted. They want somebody who can manage personalities and then process information given to him by Cashman and Cashman's team that says you need to pull a pitcher out after X number of pitches and then go and execute that and communicate it to the players.
Well, Joe, that's Girardi exactly what Girardi was doing, minus the
relationship. Okay, right, but they want somebody who will follow orders and manage a clubhouse, sort of be the bearer of bad news, if you want to look at it that way. Sit down Sonny Gray and tell him, look, we have a spreadsheet longer than you can imagine that tells us that after 90 pitches you need to be pulled out of this game, and that's what I'm going to do. You can bitch to me all you want, but anytime you're hitting that 90 pitch mark, no, you're coming out of this game. I'm just using Sonny Gray as an example.
Yeah. I don't get any indication that that's exactly what he's looking for. I really don't. I don't understand why there's a ton of people speculating towards that. One, I don't know where it's coming from. One, because where is that said? Where has Brian Cashman ever said anything like that? I don't remember things like that coming out of his mouth. What I think he's looking for is yes, I think he's looking for a guy that is going to be a more relatable player manager. That's I think the biggest thing. One, that he has a good relationship that he can work with and have an open communication and have a good open door policy so that they can go back and forth, and that Cashman's influence will be a little bit more because of that relationship. That's what I think. I don't think it's going to be this big numbers driven signing because you have to do this and that at a certain time. I think that will all go into it. I still think the biggest thing is the relationships and getting these guys to do what they say the way that you want them to do it because you have a relationship with them. And that goes into what you're saying. But I just don't think it's this hard-lined analytical signing that there's a lot of people talking about.
I don't think Cashman wants somebody who's managing with his gut. I think he wants him managing with a lot of background information, data that he can apply on the field, to on-field decisions, whether that's to lineup decisions, pitching changes, bullpen management, whatever it may be.
That's Joe Girardi. That's Joe Girardi. That is exactly.
Yeah, but Joe Girardi had that, but he didn't have, like we just said, he didn't have the communication aspect.
To some of them, I mean, some people liked him. Some people actually did have a good relationship. I think overall that they're looking for somebody just a little bit more. Look, here's the problem I have with this. People are going too much by talking about the numbers thing and making calls on what guys are because of the numbers. There are still guys out there making decisions based on numbers and gut feel. Look what Hinch just did. What was it? I don't even know what the hell game it is. A couple of games ago with Peacock when he was in and pitched, I think he went out two innings and then he sent him out for a third because he saw that he was freaking lights out and he rewarded him because Brad Peacock was pitching that well. Every number in the book says, pull this guy. There's no reason he should still be in the game. But what AJ Hinch used was his eyes, and he saw that this guy was rolling, that he had a good groove, and that these guys were not touching him, so they kept him in the game. If you don't have a manager that can look at that and see that on the field and make a decision based on that, then what in the God's name is the point of that guy? There's no point in having a manager at the helm if he can't make a decision based on intuition, feel for a game, and then also have the analytics in the back of his head to make a good decision. I just don't get that. I don't get why everybody's like, analytics, analytics, analytics. If you don't have a good blend and you're a good baseball guy, you're worthless to me.
Yes. Yeah, I agree. But I think part of the whole managing with your gut thing, or managing with what you're seeing on the field, is knowing the players' personalities. And maybe Girardi didn't know them enough as people to make an informed decision with his gut. If anything I just said made sense.
Yeah,
do you understand what I'm saying?
That could be.
Where he needs to know how a player reacts after adversity or whatever it may be. And if he doesn't have that sort of next level connection with these players, then he can't manage with his gut because his gut isn't telling him anything. So all he's doing is referring to page 7 of the binder that says, I need to bring in Tommy Canley here because I just read it.
Yeah, I get that. But that's kind of what you're saying when you're saying your example with Sonny Gray, 90 pitches, this is where you are. But what if Sonny Gray is dealing on that day and you can see that he isn't? Like then the whole reason you brought that manager in to follow your orders is completely out the window if he thinks that Sonny Gray can continue at that point. To me, that shit doesn't make sense. I just don't get it. You have to have a blend. Because look what happened with Dave Roberts. It blew up in his face when he pulled Richel. He ran out of pitching, like you said. Something that, that could have been done by using your eyeballs and just saying, okay, I'm going to go. And maybe it was just a bad decision on his part. Maybe he saw some tiring things. I don't know. There could have been a number of things.
It was one of those things, and it's happened multiple times this season, at least that's what I read, with the Dodgers, where Rich Hill is pulled after four or five innings because he does not go farther than that. He doesn't face lineups for a third time.
Yeah, and I mean, that's similar to what we had with CeCe for a while.
It was very similar.
Yeah, he was a five-inning guy at most, and that third time around, you saw big drop-offs of his.
And you were happy. You were happy if Sabathia gave you five good innings.
But to me, that's not like those are that's using data, but that's also using the trend of how a guy is and kind of where his limitation is.
Right. He's old. He's an older pitcher. It's where his career is.
So, look, I still think that there has to be a blend. But I'm not saying that Girardi, like they're looking for a guy like they are looking for a better relationship, because I do believe that goes into it. Knowing your players, having good relationships with them, you can see signs of fatigue better. You could probably pick up on some of their cues on if they say something to you, like maybe that guy doesn't really, when he said that to me, I don't really believe him, and pulling him down. Like they're absolutely, the relationship is important for a manager to make those decisions, but they got to have both. They got to have that feel. The new trend of this analytic only driven game is to me complete nonsense. It's not going to last. It's something that you have to use, but unless you're a baseball guy, you don't know some of that stuff.
Get off my lawn. Scott's coming out.
No, I think it has to be a blend of both. I think the game has progressed, and I think the game is transcending into a new level of using the analytics and all that, but you have to have both.
I think we're at a point where we have so much information available because of technology that now it's just figuring out what information to actually apply on the field.
Right, because it could get you in trouble.
You can't apply all of it. You can't apply all of it. I don't think it's possible. I think it's overkill.
I totally agree. And then you might as well, you're basically being a robotic manager at that point.
But you agree some of it is beneficial.
Oh, I think a lot of it is beneficial. I'm not against the numbers. I think there's a lot of the numbers are extremely beneficial. But at the same time, you have to use that and also apply your judgment on having a career-long, a career baseball guy. Because all these guys are career baseball guys. They've been watching and playing baseball their entire life. They know things. You know things that the numbers cannot reflect by watching the game. It's indisputable.
One of the other reasons I want the World Series just to be over is so the Yankees can actually make this hire, because this is part of the thing that's killing me, is that the speculation and the unknown of who the next manager of the Yankees is. I'm more worried about who that guy is going to be than what happens in the World Series.
Oh, that's definitely my higher on my list. I got to know who this guy is. Just give me the name. I want to know now.
So we can just Google the shit out of him.
Yeah, so we can find out what he does, who his relationships were. Or with
who he dated in high school.
Yeah. What does he know?
Possibly know about.
What is this guy's, what's on this guy's, the bad side? I want to know all that stuff too.
Another big storyline for this offseason is the luxury tax number and the Yankees getting under $197 million. Cashman has stated all along that their goal, part of this rebuild, is that they need to get under that luxury tax number so they can then restock the team with more free agents, because they've never been under it. And all you have to do is get under it once, it resets, and then the Steinbrenners will start spending again and they'll be over it before you can blink an eye. But they first need to get under 197 mil. So we sort of looked up a bunch of numbers, what the Yankees are committed to in 2018. So let's go through some of that stuff. According to Baseball Reference, the Yankees are committed to $154.4 million for 2018. That is an estimate, because that's estimating the 8 arbitration cases that the Yankees will be hearing this offseason, 8 key players on the team. But that number will go up because you add players to fill out a roster, you add players throughout the season. It's important to note that the final salary number is what you've paid for the entire season. So after the season is over in December, the commissioner's office notifies every team if they went under or if they went over.
Yeah, it's a huge deal, because the whole point is that reset. I mean, if you can get to that reset and you get under the 197, then you don't have the penalty. And at that point, the Yankees can stop wasting money and go out and actually spend money on players rather than giving it back to the other teams. It's a to me, this is the perfect year to do it. I mean, obviously they've talked about that this is going to be the case. This is what they're striving towards. And, you know, when you look up and down the lineup with the amount of, you know, controllable contracts and rookie contracts, without the giant names on there that are making a ton of money, like getting A-Rod off the books, getting some of these guys off the books, it seems like they really can actually manage it this year.
Yes. A-Rod is off the books. That's huge. Sabathia is a free agent, and his number will come down even if they re-sign him. That's big. Other free agents include Todd Frazier, Jaime Garcia, Matt Holliday, Michael Pineda. So Jaime Garcia is gone. Matt Holliday is gone. Michael Pineda is gone. Todd Frazier is still a question mark. Maybe they'll bring him back. I don't expect him. I mean, Todd Frazier, this is his last contract. So he's going to have to take a hometown discount. And I don't know if he's going to do that. I know he loves the Yankees and he was sort of a cheerleader this entire playoff run. But I don't expect him to just take a discount just because he wants to stay with the Yankees. This is the last contract. If someone's offering him more money, he's probably going to go.
How old is he? He's 30 or 31? He's actually younger than most because he looks like he's 45. he seems like he's been around a while. And I want to say he's like 31. He's a guy that the potential.
Yes, he's 31. He'll be 32 at the start of next season.
Okay, so a 32-year-old guy that he might have one more contract depending on if he signs for something. He might decide that, you know, this, I didn't put up my best numbers. Maybe if I sign a 1 or 2 year deal, I can parlay that into another 3 year deal. You know, that could be the thinking. That's happened. Definitely has happened before with guys who have come off a year that's not the greatest as far as going into free agency. It's just, you got to look at who else is in free agency, what the year looks like, and then the following year, knowing damn well what's coming up, you got to make a decision based on that. But I agree with you. Jaime Garcia is 100% gone. Holliday, there's zero reason they bring him back. Pineda, please God, go away. And then Frazier is interesting guy to look
Pineda,
at.
If Pineda does come back, it's going to be a minimal change.
Yeah, so. It'd be nothing. I don't want him, though. I don't want to deal with that.
No, right.
I no longer want to deal with that.
Yes.
Let that be stated. I no longer want to deal with that. I don't care how much money.
Let that be somebody else's problem.
Please, let that be someone else's problem. But we did win the trade.
Yes. Yes, we did. Although I have made the argument against that because we had to suffer through Michael Pineda starts. Yeah, at least the Mariners didn't have to suffer through Jesus Montero at bats.
No, it was the cotton candy guy or the ice cream guy. Who did he get into a fight with?
Ice cream sandwich guy. He got in trouble with one of the bullpen catchers or something. He just threw an ice cream sandwich at him because he called him fat or something like that.
Oh, I thought he got into a fight with one of the vendors. I think he was one of the guys like doing, you know, the cotton candy guys, it was an ice cream guy. I feel like there was a shouting match in the stands. I could be completely making this up, but I thought that's how it went down.
You'll be happy to know if you Google Jesus Montero ice cream sandwich is the first thing that comes up.
Perfect. But so this is there's not a lot of big names, obviously. I think Frazier is an interesting guy to look at just because he does add flexibility. I mean, he was talking so much, just gushing about playing in New York and potentially, you know, even the ability that he could move positions and play around. This is a guy that has absolute value. I mean, I think he really does have value in the clubhouse and then on the field. I mean, he could really play that Matt Holliday role going into next year. It just depends on the contract.
It was a scout by the name of Butch Bacala.
Nice.
This story sounds made up, and I know it's not made up, but it sounds made up.
So he threw an ice cream sandwich at a scout that was in the stands?
Yeah, because the scout was criticizing him.
Oh, man.
Poor Jesus Montero. We thought he was the next Yankees catcher.
He was supposed to be the guy. Him and Phil Hughes were supposed to carry us to Championship 28.
Yep. And Ian Kennedy and Jabba Chamberlain.
Yeah.
The good old days. It is going to be interesting, though, to see what they add and what they don't add this offseason with preparations of getting under that number. The arbitration players that we mentioned, Didi, Sonny Gray, Adam Warren, Chasen Shreve, Canely, Austin Romine, Aaron Hicks, and Dellin Betances. The only one, there's two that I think are interesting, Didi and Betances, and they're for totally different reasons. Didi, I think the Yankees will be smart, or should be smart, and sort of lock him up to something. Don't you agree that we like Didi as the shortstop, the Yankees like Didi? Let's not go year to year with him. Let's try and sort of get him on a slightly discounted longer-term contract.
Yeah, I think that's what they should look at. They should absolutely start thinking about the future with Didi because, I mean, I think he, one, has earned it. And when you look at his play on the field, the Yankees would you know, if they could look around the major leagues and find a shortstop that's better on the field, off the field, does everything that he does, you know, there aren't very many of those guys. And he's still, what is he, 25, 26 years old?
No, he's 28.
Is he 28? Really? I thought he was a couple years younger than that. But so even 28, you're still right in the prime of your career. I think he deserves a contract. He's done such a tremendous job.
27 will be 28 on opening day. Yeah, he's turning 28 in February.
So yeah, he's definitely a guy that they should look at extending. And I think it makes a lot of sense for everybody.
Right, but so if they go that route, his number will go up.
Yes, it will.
Which is fine. I don't know what the contract would be, but I think you could sort of reach he's 28 years old. You could reach a 5-year deal with him, and I think that everyone would be on board for that.
Oh, no doubt about it. He's definitely proved that he can be the guy. And if anybody on this team deserves a long-term contract, a guy that deserves a bump, it's Didi Gregorius.
And maybe some people would be concerned that you're blocking Gleyber Torres, but you can find other avenues for Gleyber Torres. Yeah. We like Didi at shortstop. He is an all-star caliber shortstop. You don't just move somebody around because you have a prospect coming up. Gleyber can play second or Gleyber can play third. There's no guarantees he's going to be better than Didi.
They're not even close to that. No, if you have a proven guy in the major leagues, you have to look at that before you look at a prospect. I know everybody's eyes get big when they think of prospects and the potential of them, because potential is a great word. It's fun. It's exciting. But Didi now is fun and exciting and very good. So, you know, you have, if Gleyber Torres turned out to be what Didi Gregorius right now, I think everybody would be ecstatic. So
you mean a potential 30 homer, 100 yeah. RBI shortstop?
Take that, right? That's okay. That's pretty decent.
Let me crunch those numbers. Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. That's pretty good.
Yeah. So I mean, that's all you got to look at. Is he the player that you want Gleyber Torres to be? Then okay, then let's re-sign him and sign him for a longer deal.
And the other guy I think is interesting is Betances, because we all remember the shitstorm that happened with Randy Levine and the arbitration hearing for Dellin Betances last offseason. I don't expect it to be that this season, because Betances is just going to take whatever he gets and then go home because he had a really horrendous end of season. I think the interesting thing will be, though, do the Yankees look to trade him?
Yeah, he definitely can't say anything this year. This year is... there was a window of opportunity where he was very good going in, and there's no longer that window of opportunity. He was terrible this year. He had a couple stretches where he was good, but I mean, horrible at the end of the season. You couldn't even go to him. I don't think they should even look at trading him. I mean, you can look at trading him, but you're not going to get any return on him, and that's a problem, because when he's right, he's one of the more dominant guys in the league, but he's just not right now. So you're trying to sell him at an all-time low, and if there's one thing that we know about Cashman, he doesn't do that. He does not do that. So,
but I think a team might look at Dellin Betances and say he might need a change of scenery, because you see the stuff, you see the success. He's a three-time All-Star. He's not a schlub.
Brian Cashman will never turn down in a conversation. I mean, he's going to look and see what's out there. He'll entertain it, but I just, at the end of the day, do you actually think that someone's going to give up something substantial, or do you keep him on and hope that he could just correct it? Because when he does correct it, he's one of the best relievers in the game.
Well, is the problem of finding him a role in the bullpen when what happened in September and October of this season, does that create more of a headache for you next season than just trading him for maybe 80 cents on the dollar?
I don't think you're getting 80 cents on the dollar. And
oh, I think you are. I think you are. I don't think you're getting.
Why?
I think you're getting still.
Everybody has why? A guy because now that can throw 100 miles an hour.
But he's a cheap proven option. I know he didn't prove it in the last 2 months of the season this year, but he does have a track record of three seasons of being a dominant reliever. And every season he faded at the end of the season, and you could look at Joe Girardi's usage of him and say and point the finger. That's why he struggled at the end of the season.
Yeah, B-Whip. The new manager better be looking at bullpen warm-up pitches. Got to have that stat in there. If we're talking about an analytic guy, got to have that one in there, because I got to know how many that guy throws, because that one is the downfall of Dellin Betances and probably cost him a lot of money. I don't know. I think they should re-sign him. I think they can absolutely entertain trades, but unless they get something that makes a ton of sense, I think Cashman's going to sit on it and hope that he can regain his form.
Someone tweeted me and said, would you do Dellin Betances for Kyle Schwarber straight up this offseason?
I mean, that's a joke.
I said, of course.
Well, no shit. There's Schwarber your there's sucked your DH.
Well, it's kind of it's interesting of the both roles because they both stunk this season at the end of the year. All right, I mean Schwarber actually had a worse year than Betances. Betances had a very he was an all-star this year. Betances was very good up until September.
Right.
All we remember is September and October and not even being able to be used in the playoffs.
I mean, he fell off the face of the planet. You could not use him. He was Chuck Knobloch on the mound. It was bad.
Oh, he was a pile of mush.
He was going to kill somebody who was stepping in the batter's box because the man didn't know where the ball was going after it left his fingers.
Deer in headlights.
Yeah, it was terrible. I have no idea what Schwarber did this year.
He was terrible.
Yeah.
Schwarber was
I know he got sent down early in the year. I remember that. I'd still take that trade in a second.
Oh, of course I would. And it would never be entertained for the Cubs to do it because Schwarber's a full-time player.
It would never
Schwarber hit 211 this year with 30 homers.
He hit 30 homers. So let me, well, Chris Carter hit 40 some home runs in the National League too. But the one thing about the Cubs and Schwarber is I do believe that they're going to realize at some point in the near future, if not already, that he doesn't have a position. And that's a big problem for them because he's a terrible left fielder, a terrible fielder. And you can't hide that guy in the National League. So he's an absolutely perfect fit for an American League team. So, you know, I think they should look at him. They probably should have looked at him a year and a half ago, but they won a World Series, so they're cool with that.
This is a whole other conversation. We can briefly talk about it now. Do you want the Yankees to bring in a full-time DH like a Kyle Schwarber? We're not saying that Betances-Schwarber trade would ever happen, but would you want them to get a full-time DH, or would you want them to rotate players into that DH spot, give guys half days off by DHing them?
Yeah, we had a mailbag about that, I believe, right? Someone was talking about...
Did we?
Yeah, someone sent that in about the DH. This one's from Ricardo. He says, regarding the roster for next year, do you think the Yankees should implement a full-time DH or have a revolving door? If the Yankees ink Frazier to a one-year deal, I think it would be better to have a DH spot as the revolving door. Headley, Frazier be the full-time DH. Headley could back up Frazier. Headley could back up Bird, Frazier, and can back up Gleyber Torres and so on and so forth. One of these things that made the Yankees so appealing that they had they advanced past Houston was that they didn't have a set DH and wouldn't be impacted the lineup playing versus the Dodgers in the National League. I think the beauty of the 90s 2000 dynasty was the fact that the lineup was so easily shifted around because all nine in the lineup could field and hit. And I think it's a good point because, you know, the way that this team is formed and the flexibility that they had this year, I mean, when Matt Holliday was gone, because he was the full-time DH, there was a, you know, that right-handed bat was a problem, that there was no big right-handed bat power that could fill in for Holliday at that point. But Headley did do a... Personally, I think that they should have some guy there, but you don't need to go out and get a big-name guy. But I would like that guy to be able to play the field.
Here's the thing. If you're telling me they're bringing Kyle Schwarber, I would say fine.
Right.
Fill up the DH spot with that kind of player.
Right.
But if it's this sort of middle-of-the-road gap sort of player, like another Matt Holliday, then I don't even necessarily want the Yankees to do that. I would much rather see them filter in players. And maybe it is Todd Frazier. And maybe it is where you rotate Frazier to third base and Headley to first base and Greg Bird in and out and all that kind of stuff. If that's the plan, that's the plan. But if it's another older player that is can only DH, I don't really see the fit for this team.
No, I totally agree. I think there are some game changers like a Schwarber. Again, first of all, let the record say this. That's an unrealistic trade, probably never ever in a million years going to happen. But if there were a guy like that could be a prolific hitter and could really benefit from the Yankees could benefit from putting him in the DH spot full time, then yeah. But I agree with you. I don't think that there needs to be an older option that can only DH. Like Carlos Beltran of the worlds are not walking onto this roster right now.
If Brian Cashman trades Dellin Betances for Kyle Schwarber this offseason, I will shave my head, put on a bandana, and climb a wall just like Brian Cashman because that's how much of a friggin' magician he is.
Yeah, that'd be ridiculous. How big of a wall are we talking here? Because we need to lock this down in case that actually does happen.
10 feet.
10 feet, that's it? It's not even a freaking wall. It's like it's a divider.
I'm not trying to break legs this offseason.
Jesus Christ. It's the terrible, terrible thing. It's not going to happen, though.
No. Another big storyline, obviously, is Tanaka's opt-out clause, which we'll get some news on shortly after the World Series because he'll want to get out ahead of it and prep for free agency. We all know what he's making, $22 million a year. If he opts out and the Yankees want to re-sign him, it will be at least for $22 million. I'd say probably $25 million just because he wouldn't opt out if he doesn't if he's not going to opt out and take the same money. He's going to opt out and get more money. His regular season does not deserve an opt out, but his playoffs absolutely do. Three starts, he was 2-1, 20 innings pitched, 0.9 ERA. Only two earned runs given up, 10 hits, 18 strikeouts, only three walks, a 181 batting average against, and here is the best part, zero home runs.
Yeah, it's big. He made a huge adjustment. I mean, it's not just the playoffs either. It's down the stretch. It's the second half. He pitched very well. And, you know, he can really lean on that, I think, for this opt-out clause and take that to the bank literally and to other teams, you know, who are going to circle him. You know, I think they'll do an assessment, seeing if they think he can make significantly more money than $22 million on the open market, and there are teams that are interested and willing to pay him that, and a longer term deal to come out, then he will do that. But at the same time, if he doesn't see that as much of an option, I still think he'll opt out. But there could be some kind of a backhand, give me a little raise type situation going on with the Yankees too. Like, I'd like to stay here, but I'm going to opt out, but I'd like to stay here. So let's negotiate something that's not crazy, but a little bit of a bump. I could see that happening.
Yeah. He's also got to look at who's also on the open market. He's going to be in free agency with Yu Darvish, Jake Arrieta, and potentially Johnny Cueto. All good pitchers, but all pitchers who are slightly on the older side. Darvish is 31, Arrieta 32, Cueto is 31. Tanaka is only going to be, he's going to be 29 years old to start next season. So if he opts out, I think he actually has a case that he is more valuable than those four pitchers.
Yeah, but it's a gamble for sure, because there are, I mean, those are three names that are, you know, guys that have been very good. Yu Darvish, I don't know, he hasn't been the same guy ever since he got back from that injury. He's still a very effective pitcher. Obviously, he had a terrible outing with the Dodgers in the World Series. Jake Arrieta had a step back. And then Johnny Cueto, I don't really know much. The Dodgers or the Giants faded so badly. I don't really know what he did this year.
He had a great season last year and just a pretty mediocre season this year, I believe.
So, you know, he might be he's probably the most effective guy in that group. It just,
I don't know if he's the most effective. I don't want to say he's the most effective. I would say he's probably the most valuable because of his age. Although you do have to factor in that has that injury. We think it's healthy, but we don't know.
I mean, it's healthy. It's healthy. Just look at what he just did. God damn. I don't get it. I don't understand why people think that he's not healthy. He's healthy. He's healthy. Yeah, it's there. There's something going on there that obviously.
So if you're a team, you're not going to give him 5 years because of you might.
He's not getting 5 years.
To give him. I think if he opts out, he's going to get 5 years.
I really don't.
That'll take him to 34 years old. I think he's going to get at least 5 years if he opts out. Why would he opt out and just sign a 3-year contract? He has a 3-year contract.
That's my point. That's why he has to look around and see if the money's going to be significantly different. I don't think the duration of the contract is going to be significantly different. I think it's going to be the money. If the money is close enough to what he's been doing now, that's when I see him going to Cashman and being like, look, I'm either leaving and doing this and it's not going to be that much. You're going to lose me for not that much more, or I'm going to give you the first opportunity to say, okay, let's give me a bump. I'll stay in New York and we'll continue this out. Maybe another year on top of it. I could see that happening.
It's also funny how this all worked out, because had Tanaka had a really good regular season, but the Yankees didn't make a deep playoff run and he opted out, I could see the Yankees just moving on from him. But he ended up not having a good regular season and then being key in a deep playoff run. And now he sort of has the Yankees by the balls, where he says, you guys want to win a World Series next year. You need me to win a World Series next year.
You need the good me to win a World Series next year. That's
you're not going to sign up for the bad me. Yeah. So yeah, I'm going to be the good me.
You need the good me. But he's absolutely right though. And given the landscape of what's going on with the pitchers, I mean, I'm looking at all those guys. I'm like, okay, Tanaka to me at that point is the most attractive option. He knows what it's like to pitch in New York. He's had success in New York. You know what you're getting. That's the guy I would rather have Tanaka than all three of those other guys.
Yeah, I'd agree.
So at that point,
they all have risk. They all have risk. Darvish also had Tommy John surgery. Arrieta has, like you said, taken a big dip down. And I've never really been a huge Cueto fan.
I just, when you're looking around, if you're looking at one of those guys that you have to sign somebody, like, just stick with Tanaka at that point. Otherwise, they're not going to sign somebody big, and they're going to go out and either, you know, hopefully they can get CeCe, which I know we're going to talk about. to stay. And hopefully he's the same guy, which is a big if. And, you know, hopefully, again, there's more hopefullys adding into it that one of the young guys could take another step forward and be that next Jordan Montgomery. And, you know, there's a lot of question marks with this rotation.
Right, because the only locks you have are Severino, Sonny Gray, and Montgomery as the only guys who are definitely on the roster next year. You have Tanaka, who might not be, and you have CeCe, who might not be. He's a free agent. What's a realistic contract for CeCe, do you think?
Again, we've circled that contract that Kuroda got. You know, it's the... I think Kuroda was at like 16 like or 18.
I think it was like 14.
Whatever. It was the middle of the teens.
A handful of years ago.
I think it's a $15, $16 million contract. One year with incentives. I think there's going to be incentives on the deal. Maybe a player option if he hits a certain amount of innings or, you know, whatever the incentive is. But I think having that second year as an option for CeCe as a player option, I think is big.
With the Yankees, Kuroda made $10 million in his first year and then signed a 1 year $15 million and then a 1 year $16
million. There you go.
So yeah, 1 year $15 million for CeCe, I think is realistic. And I think he would do that. I think for a number of different reasons, he doesn't want to go to a different team. He has roots here. He wants to stay with the Yankees. He is a clubhouse leader. It makes sense for both sides for 1 year. And if he gets injured or if he's bad, then you just move on after the end of the year. But for a number of different reasons for the Yankees, he's good insurance and he's good upside.
He's good upside. He's obviously has a real connection with a lot of the guys here. And if you're changing managers, you really don't want to disrupt too much. That worries me with the amount of disruption that could happen in this clubhouse. So guys like CeCe, I think, are still, you know, who want to be back. I think it's imperative that they bring him back. And I mean, I fully expect this to happen. There's really a lot of there's not much doubt in my mind that the two of these parties will make it happen. So. Tanaka is the real question mark. It's a real, and it's going to be very interesting to see how that plays out.
Mm-hmm. Another thing I'm interested in, and this might be a more of a conversation for spring training, but do they give Chad Green a shot at the rotation?
Yeah, it's super interesting because you look at the Luis Severino model of what happened with him when he was in the bullpen and really was able to get through with two pitches, and you're seeing what Chad Green did with two pitches. Can he add and you know, be consistent with another pitch and have effective and be effective out of the rotation? I think it's definitely something they need to look at because they have a lot of depth in that bullpen right now. And while Chad Green is a very important part of the bullpen, there's no doubt about it. You know, he could be a very important part of your rotation if he could actually make that transition. And he's definitely got the stuff. He's been a starter before, so he knows what it takes.
He was competing for that fifth starter spot last spring training.
Yeah, and I think it's imperative that he develop another pitch, though. I think that's one of the big consistency issues you'll see with him. If he does have another pitch and you know, he can't make it consistent, similar to what we saw with Severino, then he's not going to last, you know, 2-3 times through a lineup. But if he can do that, if he's a guy that can make those adjustments, he's got the stuff. There's no doubt about it.
I think a lot of it also depends on what they do in free agency. If they bring back Tanaka and bring back Sabathia, then you don't really have a need for Chad Green in the rotation, at least to start the season, assuming everyone's healthy. But if you don't have both of those guys, then you have two rotation spots to fill, and you might be looking at Chad Green as a potential number four or number five starter.
Yeah, it's a huge deal, and it fully depends on what happens.
Which is kind of scary. I mean, we all love Chad Green, but we don't know if he can be a regular starter.
No, it's scary. I mean,
just because he starts the game, just because he starts the game, we know a starter. What did Brian Kenny call him?
He called him
an opener.
An opener, yeah.
The opener.
So maybe we have four starters and an opener. Yeah. Maybe, who knows? Maybe we're going to get some guy in that loves openers. Maybe the new analytic guy that Brian Cashman loves so much is a guy that bullpens and loves openers. The New York media is not allowed to call them starters any longer. They're all openers.
Do you realize that if you went a full 162 game schedule bullpenning, how long the games would take? We'd be up until midnight every night watching Yankees baseball.
Yeah, that's a problem for what baseball wants with us with time of play.
9-hour games. Pace of play. Yeah. All right, so good stuff. A lot of stuff to look forward to. Next time we talk in a week from now, who knows, the Yankees might have a new manager. If they hire him, if the World Series ends soon and they make a hire and it's before next Monday, obviously we'll jump on for some breaking news podcast. But it's just like we said at the end of last week, It's going to be a busy offseason.
Lots of stuff to handle, man. There's going to be a lot of moving parts with this team, especially with a new manager. I mean, who knows what he brings in, too. There's just so many things that are unknown right now. It's anxiety and excitement all at the same time.
One last thing, guys. Submit mailbag questions to bronxpinstripes.com/podcast. And you can also tweet us questions and tweet us whatever. Follow us at Yankees Podcast, at Andrew_Rotondi, and at Scott Reinen. We will talk to you guys in a week. Hey, guys. Thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripes Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.